Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, July 21st, 2020. Sudan's former president Omar al-Bashir has appeared in court to answer charges for toppling a democratic elected government in 1989.
30 years of the regime, there are many of atrocities has been committed and many crimes. So this may make them, all of them, under the judiciary and under the laws, and particularly the Sudanese criminal law.
And the United Nations is asking for millions of dollars to help families affected by COVID-19 in Sudan.
In the years of conflict, recurrent climatic shocks, such as now we are seeing a desert locust, and the various disease of outbreaks with flood. So it's a dire situation.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Officials in Sudan have begun the trial of former President Omar al-Bashir, who has been accused of toppling a democratic elected government in 1989. If found guilty, Bashir could face a death sentence. For VOA News, Michael Atit has more from Khartoum.
Speaking in Arabic, Zain al-Abidin Muhammad, one of the Bashir's defense lawyers, says today's proceedings lasted no more than a few minutes. He says the actual court hearings are scheduled to get underway on August 11 in a large courtroom.
Today was just a normal procedural court which includes registration of presence of accused, defense lawyers, and the presence of the indictment team as well. So it was a routine procedure.
Al-Bashir was present in court today along with 28 former high-ranking officials also accused of overthrowing the government. Muhammad says the defense team raised an official complaint about the size of the court hall, which could not accommodate all of the suspects and their lawyers due to COVID-19 social distancing procedures.
We noticed that the court hall is not conducive. Social distancing could not be observed by our clients. There were 29 accused presents alongside 190 defense lawyers in addition to more than 10 indictment teams.
Al-Bashir, who was ousted from power by military in April 2019 after mass protests across Sudan against his rule, is charged with overthrowing the government of As-Sadiq al-Mahdi in 1989. Muhammad Ali Fazari, a Sudanese writer and the editor-in-chief of the online English newspaper Khartoum Today, describes today's proceedings as historic. He says it sends a clear message that the Sudanese justice system is now becoming independent and will try people who were in the highest positions of the country.
And the other message that for the international community that Sudan is no longer being isolated because of the weak and politicized judiciary systems.
Fazari says he believes none of the accused 190 individuals facing similar charges with al-Bashir can be set free because of the nature of the alleged crimes committed.
30 years of the regime, there are many of atrocities has been committed and many crimes. So this may make them, all of them, under the judiciary and under the laws, and particularly the Sudanese criminal law.
Al-Bashir and five other Sudanese officials were indicted years ago by the International Criminal Court in Hague for alleged war crimes, genocide, and crimes against humanity committed in Darfur region. Sudanese officials have said they would hand over Bashir to the ICC, but the Sudanese officials said they would hand over al-Bashir to the ICC, but that has yet to happen. The former president has been jailed in Khartoum since his removal. He also faces charges of undermining the constitution and violating the Armed Forces Act, beside fomenting a coup in 1989. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Still in Sudan, the United Nations and humanitarian partners are calling on the international community to provide $283 million to assist 6.7 million Sudanese affected by COVID-19. Sudan's humanitarian coordinator says the country is one of the most affected in the region, and the money is urgently needed to provide life-saving health and humanitarian assistance to millions of Sudanese. For VOA News, Nabil Biagio reports from Washington.
Sudan has recorded nearly 11,000 coronavirus infections and close to 700 deaths since the first infection was reported in mid-March. Sudan's humanitarian coordinator, Gui Yopsan, says the COVID-19 pandemic hit the Sudanese population at a very vulnerable time.
They have been suffering from the economic crisis, which of course ignited the whole protest in December of 2018, and the years of conflict, recurrent climatic shocks, such as now we are seeing desert locust and various disease of outbreaks with flood. So it's a dire situation.
Sun says the pandemic also caught Sudan at a particularly bad time because the country was just beginning to transition into civilian and democratic rule after the fall of former President Omar al-Bashir in April 2019. On Sunday, the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, or OCHA, launched an addendum to the 2020 Humanitarian Response Plan, in which it asked the international community to come up with $283 million to assist 6.7 million Sudanese impacted by COVID-19.
Our appeal to mobilize $283 million to address some of the key gap areas, including food security, because we are afraid that there will be far more people who will go hungry. And if we do not provide urgent food assistance, many will suffer from not only hunger, but also from malnutrition. And it could be a severe impact on especially the most vulnerable, such as pregnant women and children.
Sun says millions of Sudanese who work in the informal sector and depend on daily work to feed their families have lost their income because of COVID-19 measures aimed at curbing the spread of the virus. Farmers are also having a hard time accessing seeds and planting crops during the current rainy season, which will only worsen the country's already dire food security situation. If funding is secured, Sun says, half of the money will be used for vaccinations.
It's directly related to making sure that that we have sufficient vaccinations to be provided to the children, and so there's no gap, or that we have enough supplies to treat malaria, cholera, and number of outbreak of disease that usually come with the rainy season.
The other half of the $283 million would be used for things like food and protection, according to Sun.
There has been an increasing number of domestic violence cases, and we are witnessing that across the world, a rise in domestic violence and the need for us to make sure that we are able to provide timely support to the victims and also kind of continue our protection services.
Earlier this month, the humanitarian partners released Sudan's Integrated Food Security Phase Classification, or IPC, report, which said close to 10 million Sudanese face high acute food insecurity because of conflict, high inflation, and the COVID-19 pandemic. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
Still on COVID-19, residents and health experts in Jonglei State are criticizing South Sudanese leaders for holding public rallies during the COVID-19 pandemic. Vice President James Waniga held a rally attended by thousands of people in Bor this week who did not wear face masks or observe social distancing. The director for Bor Hospital says holding social gatherings such as political rallies during the COVID-19 pandemic amounts to putting people's lives at risk. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
Vice President Iga, who arrived in Bor on Sunday, led a high-level committee formed by President Salva Kiir to investigate the root causes of intercommunal violence between armed youth from Jonglei State's Bor and Akobo counties on the one hand, and youth from Greater Pibor Administrative Area on the other. Iga, former presidential advisor Daniel Awet Akut, and Humanitarian Affairs Minister Peter Mayan Majongdit, along with others in IGA's delegation, staged a public rally in Bor attended by more than 5,000 people despite the ban on large social gatherings due to COVID-19. Dr. Bol Chow, the director of Bor Hospital, says overcrowded places like big rallies are the perfect breeding ground for spreading the deadly virus.
From what I'm seeing, if one person is diagnosed or has a case of coronavirus, actually, when he or she is in a crowd, there may be transmission of the disease to other susceptible individuals. And as such, overcrowding is banned in South Sudan here, but it's very difficult because people don't want to listen. There are still social gatherings. Everyone is aware of what needs to be done, but people are just ignoring them. So it becomes very difficult. Just a song, even in the phones, telephones, if you call, I think there are messages being passed on to people, but still nobody is even listening, nobody is caring.
IGA's delegation is continuing to hold meetings this week with community members in Bor, Akobo, and Pibor. Bol Deng Bol from the Bor-based National Civil Society Alliance is urging IGA's committee to meet with small numbers of community representatives to prevent the spread of COVID-19. He says that did not happen on Sunday.
There was no social distancing. It was not observed. Given the importance of this occasion, it's the right time, you know, holding it. It's the right time. But I think they should consider some of the preventive measures that today sidelined. Mm-hmm. So in the coming meetings, I think they should consider this. Calling a minimum representative of people, not like 10 and 15 in youth groups and this and that. At least from one section, they can call two or three, so that they can observe distance in wherever they will be holding this, and also the wear masks and so on.
Jog Mapere, acting secretary of the ruling SPLM party in Jonglei State, which organized Sunday's rally, says while he is aware of the ban on social gatherings, there was nothing else official could do because of the overwhelming need to secure peace in the region.
We welcome the vice president, seeing the government, the president has decided to send the vice president to come and also cut down this prevention. We are also attacked by the coronavirus, and we are also attacked by this insecurity, which is too much for us. So we need our population to be sensitized by the government and to give them a hope.
It is not the first time a youth rally was organized by the SPLM in Bor, since the ban on social gathering has been in effect. 2 weeks ago, the party organized a rally to celebrate the South Sudan's Independence Day. South Sudan Health Ministry spokesman Dr. Thuy Loy says most South Sudanese do not take COVID-19 preventive measures seriously.
People are not, and we have already called on that. People are back to normal as if nothing is happening. People are not keeping social distancing. Most people are not wearing masks. This is very worrying. And we want to find out the reasons as to why people are doing that. If people believe that there is no COVID-19, then that is a fatal mistake. There is COVID-19.
Dr. Loy says it is important to adhere to preventive measures or South Sudan could see an upsurge in cases as there are in Kenya and the United States. In Afrol, police arrested the self-proclaimed prophet Abraham Chol Maketh of the Kush International Church in South Sudan for holding religious gatherings in defiance of the ban on social gatherings. A court in Juba sentenced him to 1 month in prison. Bor resident Philip Ajanga Yom says no one is above the law and all violators should be brought to justice, including government officials who defy the ban.
If there could be justice and if the government is really trying to protect its citizens, then whoever violated the coronavirus or the COVID-19 pandemic measurements to protect people, I should be held accountable, of course.
As of Saturday, South Sudan recorded 2,211 coronavirus cases with 45 deaths and 1,185 recoveries. For VOA News, I am Deng Gai Deng in Bor.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, how is COVID affecting children? That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how can you help someone dealing with depression?
I just give my time to that person and we discuss matter concerning that depression which that person is facing.
First of all, I'll find out what is depressing that person. And when I find out the root cause, of course, I try to advise the person according to what he or she is going through.
By counseling the person through counseling and then sharing ideas. Maybe sometimes going out for football or watching football, movies, such things can also help.
I recommend music, the music therapy. Music therapy in the sense that music has a way of giving a soothing feeling whenever the person listens to music.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. In our health segment, we take a look at children in Cameroon. Cameroon's medical authorities say over 200,000 children have not received routine vaccinations on schedule since March, when the country had its first case of COVID-19. Parents are refusing to take their kids to hospitals because they fear the virus, which has spread to nearly 17,000 people and cost nearly 400 deaths. Doctors are warning that without vaccinations, children in Cameroon risk preventable diseases such as measles and whooping cough. Muki Edwin Kinzeka reports for VOA from Yaoundé.
A 4-month-old baby cries as she receives her second polio vaccine at the Chantal Biya Foundation Hospital in Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé. 27-year-old Elizabeth Mbungong says she is getting her baby's booster shot nearly 3 months late because she was scared of going to the hospital during the COVID-19 pandemic.
I gave birth in the month of March, and the first vaccine was given to the baby against tetanus. They gave me another rendezvous in the month of April. I did not respect because I was afraid of the coronavirus.
Mbungong said after she watched a TV program on the dangers of not vaccinating children, she decided that going to the hospital was worth the risk. Pediatrician Clemence Vukmo says many parents are letting fear of the virus prevent them from getting their children vaccinated.
Nous avons constaté une baisse extrêmement importante.
She says Chantal Biya Foundation Hospital should have had 2,300 children for routine vaccinations since March, but they have seen only about half the children. Cameroon's medical officials say the problem has been widespread during the pandemic. Cameroon's National Expanded Program for Immunization reports across the country at least 200,000 children have not received their vaccinations as scheduled. Deputy Permanent Secretary of the program, Shalom Chokfe, says they have deployed staff to look for the children. He spoke via telephone from Douala, a coastal city and the largest in Cameroon.
48,000 enfants à 54,000 enfants ont vacciné entre mars et avril.
Chokfe says the situation is especially troubling in the capital Yaoundé, the economic hub Douala, and the western town of Bafoussam. He says 110,000 children in those cities have not received their routine vaccines since the month of March, when Cameroon reported its first case of COVID-19. Teams can meet the children in their houses, says Chokfe. Parents and health workers are safe during routine vaccinations at hospitals, he says, as long as they wear their mask and wash their hands regularly. Chokfe notes that vaccinations dramatically reduce child mortality and urges all parents to get their infants vaccinated on schedule. The United Nations warned this month of an alarming decline in the number of children getting vaccinated for preventable diseases such as diphtheria, tetanus, and the measles. According to a study published by the Lancet Global Health Journal this month, continuing with routine immunizations may lead to 8,300 additional deaths in Africa from COVID-19. But the study said suspending vaccinations could lead to a further 702,000 African children dying from preventable diseases. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Students in Malawi, one of the poorest countries in Africa, have been out of school since March because of the COVID-19 pandemic. While most students have been able to study from home on the internet or radio, many in poor and remote villages have been left out. A British charity, Voluntary Services Overseas, has stepped in to bridge the gap by distributing solar-powered computer tablets with pre-programmed lessons to rural primary school students. For VOA News, Lamek Masina has this story from Blantyre.
Morning.
The lessons begin with the voice of an instructor who tells students how to go about their assignments. All the content is in Malawi's main language, Chichewa, and helps students improve skills in reading, writing, and math. Parents say the intervention has eased their worry about the children's education, which spiked again after the government announced last week that it has suspended plans to reopen schools on July 13 due to a rise in COVID-19 cases. Olivia Maxson is one of the concerned parents. She says, "I lost hope, but with the coming of these iPads, we are very happy because now my children have something to do. They have stopped playing around," she says. "They are now learning. This will improve their education." Voluntary Services Overseas says that so far it has provided 1,000 tablets to learners in poor families who cannot access radio and television lessons, which government is currently providing. Yesani Kapanda is program manager for the VSO.
What happens is that the moment that the learner starts using them, there is what we call a diagnostic tools that places the kid at the right curriculum, depending on his or her levels. So, and then the kids start learning from there.
Kapanda says the learner's progress is monitored remotely.
We have put a SIM card in those tablets and we are able to monitor what is happening. If the learners are not using them, we are able to identify such households. We have also built the capacity of some teachers in those communities that are able to follow up from those households and provide any support that they may need as the learners are using these gadgets.
Shailene Joseph is a grade 4 student benefiting from the initiative in Lilongwe. She told VOA she enjoys learning through a tablet more than she would have learned through radio lessons. She says there isn't much practical work on radios, while the tablets are very interactive. She says we read, write, and sit for exams through tablets. Gosam Mafuta is the director of basic education in the Ministry of Education. He told VOA that although the tablet lessons are in line with the primary school curriculum, learners will not be assessed on these once the schools are reopened.
We're just bridging the gap, trying to make sure that we keep them engaged so that they don't forget the curricular material they were interacting with. When they come, we're not going to assess them on that material. We'll actually begin again and try to find means on how we can actually bridge up those that we're not getting it, because we are mindful of the fact that not all our learners are getting these lessons.
VSO's Kapanda says the organization plans to distribute 5,000 more tablets, which will also have content for junior secondary school learners. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
Lesbians, gay, Bisexual and transgender refugees say they find it very difficult to stay in the Kakuma refugee camp because their safety is at risk. Some of them who lived in the camp want to be evacuated after they said they were attacked, beaten last month. Kenya's refugee secretariat says most of the people claiming to be LGBT came into the country as male or female and changed their gender later. Maureen Ojiambo reports for VOA from Nairobi.
The LGBTQ plus group and other people living in Kakuma refugee camp clashed, leaving others with injuries that led to arrest and prosecution of the attackers. The UNHCR, however, confirmed that the clashes at the Kakuma refugee camp are not new to them. Living in Kakuma refugee camp in Kenya, a Ugandan native, Gilbert Turia Mureba, said that the local society does not accommodate the nature of their life, and most of them face attacks both in the camp and outside.
So by continuing to bring more LGBTQ plus persons in Kakuma, UNHCR and the Kenyan government in a way are encouraging these attacks because the local population have made their position very clear. We shall not live with the LGBTQ plus persons. According to them, we are an abomination.
Gilbert says their efforts to have UNHCR evacuate them from the camp have not been successful.
The director spoke to us as a group and said, we're going to increase the supervision of police. We're going to make sure you're safe using the police patrols. Now, frankly, even though he tried, the attacks have increased. 10 days earlier, we had submitted a petition to Geneva asking for a safe place. All we wanted was a safe place.
A transgender woman, Doreen Andrews, was first attacked last year in Nairobi, then left for Kakuma refugee camp, where clashes erupted on 18th and 19th of June and was beaten alongside her colleagues, leading to dislocation of her shoulder. Doreen says she had to run for her life early this month back to Nairobi.
A group of about 25 South Sudanese boys attacked our compound. They hid me in one of the shelters. I thought my shoulder was just swollen, but it was dislocated. In Kakuma, the LGBT community that is there is living on a thread of life. No one is intervening. We have tried to call out to UNHCR. We have tried to call out to the police, but clearly they are done with us.
The UNHCR has confirmed that there is always clashes in Kakuma refugee camp and that LGBTQ attacks are common given the local Turkana community want to uphold their cultural practices. Kenya's Refugee Affairs Secretariat Codek Makori said that Doreen Andrews was first registered as a man when he came in the country in 2015 and that his LGBTQ claims are fake.
We don't have a refugee registered in the name of Doreen Andrews, but because we have dealt with this guy previously, we know him as Andrew Kigongo, and he is just one of those troublemakers in Kakuma who is always inciting people against the government of Kenya.
Mr. Makori said that the wish of the LGBTQ group having them relocated can only happen if they are being taken back to their country of origin.
Kenya is not in a position to relocate these people from here to any other country except probably to their home countries. On the issue of whether UNHCR is not taking good care of these people, that is not true. Many of these refugees have gotten all the support they need from UNHCR. If they think that they are not getting their rights in this country, they have a right to either go back or choose another country where they can get better treatment.
On 24th of May 2019, the High Court of Kenya refused an order to declare sections 162 and 165 that does not support gayism unconstitutional. Reporting for viewers, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Umkombochi by Yvonne Chaka Chaka. I'm John Tanz in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to wash your hands, practice social distancing, and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Come on.